CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talks Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the independent private sector lobby group and business networking club Downtown Liverpool in Business. And every Sunday we look at some of the week's big business stories and talk to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week, the chief executive of the cooperative group, Peter Marks, said that we are experiencing the worst economic conditions for 40 years. Are we? And if so, what can we do about it? Apparently, we can't rely on the banks to get us out of the mess, certainly not those who were bailed out by the state. As research again this week showed that they are bottom of the league when it comes to lending to small and medium enterprises. Is it time for the government to put some real pressure on banks to get the economy moving? And so as not to get listeners too despondent this morning, I'll also be looking ahead to a number of forthcoming downtown events that will hopefully help to lift the gloom. To discuss this and more, I'm sure, I'm joined in the studio today by John Leach from Winning Pitch, Jane Boardman from Deloitte and Daniel Davis from CPL Training. Good morning to you all.
Morning.
Morning.
I think they still need waking up. I'll come to you first, Jane. Deloitte, obviously a big accountancy firm, I suppose they're known as best, but I know they provide lots of other services as well. What's your specific role in there?
I'm an audit partner based in the Northwest, so I split my time between Manchester and Liverpool offices. Look after all of our people in Liverpool. We've got an office that's 70 strong and we take on around 6 or 7 new graduates every year. So that's kind of the day job. Alongside that, I look after a number of the Northwest's biggest companies in terms of their audits. Companies like Japan Tobacco, Warburton's, Prince's are also a client of our Liverpool office. So some really big companies, and get to work with some fantastic people.
Great. And Dan, just tell the listeners a little bit about CPL Training.
CPL is a company that's involved, obviously, in training, not just in the UK, but abroad. The international stuff we tend to concentrate around the Gulf region, things like English language testing. And in the UK, we do a fairly wide variety of different types of training, from e-learning to face-to-face delivery and apprenticeships, MVQs, across a number of sectors, mainly licensed retail and hospitality.
Yeah, and Mr. Leach? Not a virgin on this programme by any means. In fact, not a virgin by any means. John,
yep.
Winning Pitch, just a brief description of what you guys are about.
Our focus, Frank, is primarily on supporting the SMEs, fast-growing SMEs. Yeah, our passion is very much around, you know, we talk about an SME-driven recovery. Our focus is that they're on working with those gazelle-like businesses that they've got the potential, they've got the scope to grow, and we put a comfort blanket around those businesses and support them with the advice and the mentoring that they need to take the businesses to the next level.
And that sort of brings me on to the first topic that I want to get your views on today, really, which is the comments that were made by Peter Marks, who's the chief executive of the cooperative group, who said we're experiencing the worst economic conditions for 40 years. First of all, John, do you agree with that statement? And secondly, perhaps more importantly, what's the solution if that is the case?
I think there's an issue at the top level. I think we are most certainly in uncertain times. But I do certainly see pockets of recovery within some of the businesses that we're working with. I mean, many of the businesses that we're working with are operating in what I would call high growth sectors. And those high growth sectors are typically ones that are global from day one. So their overall orientation, their overall outlook to business is very much with very much around recession. I've decided not to participate. I'm going to move on and do my own things. I'm going to stop listening to Robert on BBC Radio 4 and News at 10. I'm going to get on and do my own thing. But I think it is fair to say that, you know, within certain sectors there is work to be done. I think in terms of what needs to be done, I think I would seriously encourage more focus on, you know, from public sector around the sort of the growth agenda. I know there are things on the agenda. I know there are things that are being planned, but I'd like to see a little bit more speed by way which these so-called gazelles, SMEs, you know, growth potential businesses are supported. I think there's a matter of urgency now. We need to, you know, we need to start picking things up and moving it at a pace. Mm.
And Jane, just in terms of the companies that you work alongside, what do you think the current conditions are for those names that you mentioned earlier, you know, some big, large companies that clearly, you know, will be part of any recovery that hopefully will not be too far away?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there are common themes in terms of the companies that are doing well at the moment. I mean, I think the ones that are in emerging markets, you know, that aren't just focused on UK markets are the ones that are spotting opportunities. And by emerging markets, I'm not just thinking about the BRIC countries. It's the next wave of emerging markets, but, you know, behind that, South America, Africa, you know, that's where the opportunities are going to be for rapid growth. The other industry that's doing particularly well at the moment is oil and gas, and anybody who's supplying anything into the oil and gas sector is doing fantastically well and just going from strength to strength. I think in contrast to that, you know, the retailers, the UK retailers in particular, construction and UK manufacturing are all really, really suffering. And I think it's just very difficult to tell at the moment how much of that is down to, the overall economy and levels of discretionary spending, and how much is down to just consumer confidence. And I think, you know, in some ways it breeds itself. The media coverage that we've had is always focusing on the negative. And you can look, you know, in certain cultures, Japan, for example, is a great example. You know, had a huge disaster there, which still impacts business today. Their attitude is not what went wrong, who's to blame, let's throw our toys at the pram. Their attitude is what's the solution. Mm. And I think that's where the difference lies. And, being very consistent with what John's just said, the people that are doing well are the ones that are looking to the future and saying, what's the opportunity in this for me, rather than, you know, where's the threat or you know, isn't this all awful?
Mm. I think that's a great point, actually, in terms of the negativity that does surround an awful lot of what's going on in the UK at the moment. And we've discussed on many occasions on this programme how 24-hour saturation news can obviously impact far greater than in previous recessions. And I do wonder whether this climate of, you know, and comments like the worst in 40 years is somewhat bred because of that media hype and media attention. You also have to ask, I mean, I'm sure Peter Marks is not among them, but some people you feel are stating facts and statistics and making rather bold statements on the back of whether they can grab a headline or not. And, it doesn't always help the economy or the general mood and confidence of the country. But Jane mentioned three areas there where she felt that the UK economy was struggling, and I think we would all agree: retail, construction and manufacturing. You also mentioned that exporting is an area where there's potential for growth. Dan, you mentioned that CPL do quite a bit of work abroad.
We do an amount of work abroad. I mean, we work in the Gulf region, actually, a number of oil and gas companies we work for, like Kuwait Petroleum Corporation and people like that. And it is very buoyant around that type of sector. I think in the UK, obviously, just echoing what Jane said, retail has been hit really, really hard. And I think it's just more important at the moment for companies to be light on their feet, to look ahead, and also to change with the times. I mean, I think a lot of retail companies that are finding themselves in the position they're in now, it's because they haven't looked far enough ahead. They haven't looked at, the sort of the real impact online is having online sales. And we got hit by a number of major retailers that we were training for who ended up going out of business. A lot of these companies, you know, were quite forward thinking, but obviously not forward thinking enough, and ended up, you know, going out of business. People like the Fresher Group, who had 2,500 stores, people like Quicksave, Wine Cellar, people like that. I think internationally, if you can get into the international market, if you can break into that, I think it can be very lucrative. It can often take a long time to get into a market. And particularly in the Gulf region, a lot of it is based around relationships, about seeing people face to face and building that relationship up over a number of years and strengthening it. So it is something that you've got to make use of people like UK Trade and Investment. I know the council has been doing a number of initiatives trying to break into the Chinese market and bring business together. And I think you've got to use what advice there is out there, but also you've got to earmark an amount of money, an amount of time, and that it is a higher risk higher risk strategy.
Jane was talking about finding solutions, and John, I know that we've had conversations around exports and what the government could actually do to improve conditions for businesses who are looking to export and really kickstart, if you like, that side of our economy, because it's not great, is it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'd echo the thoughts around, you know, I'm a great believer that businesses should be thinking globally from day one. But I think that the sort of the cautious side of me also says, you know, the forays into international markets can be extremely, extremely challenging. You know, so the first time exporter who lands in Egypt, for example, as I did 7 years ago, I thought to myself, what on earth have I done here? You know, the psychology of it, the ways of doing business, the sort of routes to market, you know, engaging in the cultural aspects can be pretty daunting. And so I think, you know, and as with the BRIC markets, you know, BRIC markets offer massive opportunities. But to think you're going to break into China, for example, after one or two visits, you know, you're actually kidding yourself. It's not going to happen. Maybe after a couple of hundred thousand quid that you've spent, then you might start to see something emerge. So it's a long-term strategy. So I think, you know, in order to make that commitment financially, particularly from an SME perspective, you know, it is, you know, the government's got to think win-win. You know, at the minute, I see it as a win-lose. Win for the government, lose for the, you know, the individual that's going out and trying to make the name. So, you know, what are the incentives? You know, could we potentially think about tax breaks? You know, could we think about tax breaks for those, you know, ambitious entrepreneurs that are looking overseas, just in the same way as you see with R&D, the R&D tax breaks? So, you know, as I start to think about this, you know, yes, we have to be promoting a culture of international development. One thing that still sticks in my throat is what I saw sort of 7 years ago, the promotion of, you know, doing business in Libya, for example, where, you know, UK companies were encouraged, you know, to go and do business over there, to look at opportunities over there, to go and set up plant over there. Many of them did it, and many of them now cost, you know, are paying the price of that. So he's being mindful of, you know, of what, you know, of what challenges you face when you actually get into these markets, because it can actually break you as well, as much as it can actually grow you.
And Jane, just, you know, given your involvement with people who obviously are involved in the export markets as well, do you feel that there's enough tax incentives, financial incentives for people to start taking those risks that John talks about there?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've got a profitable business in the UK, there's obviously, you know, some clever things you can do around tax planning as to how you structure your activities internationally that can actually, you know, create tax savings for a group regardless of what the tax regime actually says and whether that gives you an official break. I think perhaps one of the areas that we're not very good at and we're not seeing a lot of at the moment is companies actually getting together and actually sharing in the risk of breaking into an overseas market, sharing distribution channels, sharing contacts, sharing expertise, sharing local market knowledge. You know, I think a lot of companies think by themselves and it's too big a risk for them to do on their own. But actually, if they were encouraged to set up joint ventures, you know, different investment vehicles that allowed them to share that risk, you know, and share the reward in due course, hopefully, you know, I think that would encourage a few more people to dip their foot in.
I mean, Dan, again, you know, somebody who's actually out there doing this, do you feel that there is an infrastructure of support there, or do you often think, actually, you know, it's going to be tough, this, and financially we are taking a risk?
I think you always do, you know, it is always risky. You are always taking a risk when you go abroad, and the key is to try and mitigate that as much as possible. And that I think that you've got to earmark an amount of time and an amount of money and be prepared to lose it. Certainly if you're an SME type business, and that you know, you can get some good return on investment if it's done properly, but you're not going to get a quick return on investment in most cases. It will be over a number of years. So we went out in 2007. I think in 2007 I did 48 flights around the sort of like Gulf region. So every week I was on a plane somewhere. And that we did a lot of presentations. We went back two or three times to each country. And that we're still servicing contracts that we won then in places like Iran and all over the Middle East.
Doesn't do your air miles any harm, does it? we're just going to go to a quick break. Stay with us, and we'll be talking bank lending and a number of fantastic downtown events that are coming up within the next few weeks. So stay with us.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the show. I'm joined in the studio today by John Leach from Winning Pitch, Jane Borman from Deloitte and Daniel Davis from CPL Training. Before the break, we were talking about comments that have been made by the Cooperative Group Chief Executive Peter Marks, who'd suggested that we're in the worst economic times for 40 years. I was just asking my guests what some of the solutions were. We all seem to be fairly consistent in suggesting that export markets are pretty good if we can get involved with them a little bit more vigorously, and perhaps the government could do something to help there. But certainly the one thing that most of our members, most companies are complaining about at this moment in time is bank lending, or rather lack of it. Again, I have to say that I have some sympathy with the banks. For many years, we've been told that it's their fault that we're in this economic mess. And one of the major reasons for that is that they were lending to anyone and to all and sundry, and perhaps taking far too many risks. But do you think as a result of all that experience, they've become too risk averse? And Jane, can I start with you on that one? Because you must have relationships with banks. How are you finding it out there?
I think, you know, there's been a lot of change at the banks, and I think what my clients have experienced is that their contact has changed almost daily, you know, certainly over the last 18 months. And that in itself has created problems in that they just don't have the relationships with people who understand their business. And you really do need a good understanding of a business to be able to assess its risks and make a decision on whether funding is appropriate. I think banks are very... very, very keen now to let companies know that they are open for business again. They do have money to lend, and that if the opportunity is right, they will lend. I think the problem that we have at the moment is that they just won't touch certain sectors, or if they'll say that they will consider, you know, investments across every sector, but in reality, it's very unlikely that a construction company or property investment company would get something through credit committee at the moment. I think some of it is about entrepreneurship as well, and you know, are there that many SMEs willing to start up in the current climate, given the levels of confidence? So I'd be interested to see data in terms of the number of applications the banks had actually received. I think that's part of the problem. Mm. It's not just all about the banks saying no.
I mean, anecdotally, you know, I can say that there's an awful lot of people within the group of companies that we represent who've had conversations with me suggesting that they probably do have some growth potential, but they're fearful of a conversation with the banks, not because necessarily there's going to be a refusal, but there's going to be a shift in terms of charges. So where they've been paying a particular percentage for many years and they've been on the same sort of overdraft facility and so on and so forth, their fear is, well, if we go and ask for that to be increased, we're going to get smacked with a charge that is far in excess of what we've been paying previously.
I think it's not only the charges, Frank. I think what I've increasingly experiences, it's the level of personal risk that we're expecting the entrepreneur to subject themselves to. And unless, you know, my experience has been, unless it's asset-backed or personally guaranteed, you know, it's almost the overdraft is a thing of the past. Mm. You know, yeah, you can have an overdraft as long as we can secure it against, you know, a physical asset, a property, which I can see the logic in that, but it, you know, I also feel there's a certain level of risk that if an entrepreneur goes beyond that, then that individual can't sleep at night. So how can we promote a spirit of risk and a spirit of forward thinking when you lay in bed at night thinking about whether you're going to get paid, whether you're going to get the orders in, and if I don't, my house is going to go. And what does that mean for my family? And I think so these are the issues that I think we need to get closer to. And so my experience has been, yeah, the banks are willing to push money out. Of course, yeah. But then, you know, the terms upon which that is being actually pushed out in terms of personal security and backing, I think that needs review.
Mm. I just get the sense that what we've done here is we've gone from one extreme to the other. So we've had banks sort of lending to anything and everything, and they particularly got burnt with the property market. And now we've gone the opposite way. So they're almost totally risk averse. And we need to find a middle ground, don't we, Dan, really? That's the sensible way forward.
I think so. I mean, I think something you said before, I think really, really rings true, which is, you know, years ago, you used to really get to know your bank manager, and that they used to understand the business, understand you. And that fortunately, the relationship we've got with our bank manager is very strong like that. But too many times now you're dealing at arm's length with different people who are changing all the time. The amount that they can sign off is getting reduced and reduced. To ends up going to, you know, a London office who don't know your business. They're just looking at an online application, and that they don't understand you, the business. And I think that negatively impacts on the sort of lending. I also think that, in the bank's defence, that I think they're getting mixed messages from the government. You know, the government is saying, clean up your act, clean up your balance sheet, you know, rebuild your balance sheet, and we're going to regulate you more and lend more. We can't do all of that, you know. Yeah. And that, you know, I'm not saying I'm a massive fan of the banks, because I think they have in the past been really bad, you know, lending money to people and, you know, really chasing after people who shouldn't have been lending, you know, the amount of money that they did. And I do think that they have gone too far the other way now. I think there's good businesses out there that could grow a lot more than they are if they had more, you know, of a better relationship with the bank, and the bank were taking a few more.
I'd agree with that, Dan. I think it's interesting that lots of the banks have labelled their guys as relationship managers, and they're everything but. You know, it's all back to what the computer says. You know, try and get an increase on your credit card.
Computer says no.
Yeah, you know, try and get a grand increase on your credit card. It takes 3 weeks. It's just ridiculous. And I have some sympathy, because you know, the guys at our bank, you know, the mates, but now they feel embarrassed because they can't have a sensible business conversation, because they've only got so much responsibility and they can only go so far. So, you know, traditionally when they'd allow you to do, they had the autonomy to do certain things, they're having to keep going back to the computer and seeing what the computer says. Yeah. And so,
would you, Jane, be in favour of the government taking a far more aggressive approach then with the banks, particularly those that we bailed out? Because Vince Cable in particular has been banging on about banks have got to start lending more, we're going to start monitoring lending more, the SME sector is where we're going to start to create jobs and climb out of the recession. Or do you get a little bit nervous when governments start interfering to that sort of extent?
I think a bit of both. I mean, you know, where we're at with you know, some significant banks being you know, largely government owned, you know, is not an ideal situation. You know, we want a competitive economy. We want those banks to be in the public hands. You know, creating growth for shareholders and pension schemes across the country, not you know, put into the government's coffers for them to waste on the next big cost saving scheme. But I think the banks do need, you know, their own autonomy to manage their own destiny. You know, until this happened, you know, nobody, you know, I think everybody thought that the UK had one of the strongest banking systems in the world, and it shouldn't, in theory, be difficult to get back to that once we're over this hump. I think the monitoring point is the key. I think that there being a system in place to monitor what's happening, to monitor who they're lending to, what type of lending it is, as John said, you know, if it's a sort of lending that's invoice financing, or, you know, a stock secured facility or an overdraft, it can be withdrawn at 24 hours notice. So that doesn't give a small or medium sized enterprise the security that they're going to be here in 12 months time. And even if it's not a facility that's got, you know, an on demand repayment, it's typically a 12 month facility with a renew date, a review date, renewal date, which again, you know, if business hasn't been going well, you know, they get to a position where, you know, they just dread that discussion, because they know at least it's going to be expensive, and at worst, you know, it's going to have the rug pulled from under them.
Yeah,
I think that's quite a scary point, because that rug can be pulled overnight.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard scary instances where, you know, a phone call's gone in, we've withdrawn your facility unless, and you've got 24 hours to sort it. Mm.
And you end up having
a good place to be.
Yeah, you end up spending a disproportionate amount of your time managing your relationship with the bank, you know, as opposed to spending my time driving the business forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I take the point you made, Dan, that bank managers used to be the people that you would forge your relationship with, and they would understand and appreciate your business, your plans. They'd know if you were getting into difficulties, and they come and have a sensible conversation with you about that. But equally, if they saw some potential for growth, they'd encourage you in that respect as well.
Exactly. Autonomy to do so, which at the moment, it's just become an overly bureaucratic. So I think some monitoring from a distance is probably the right balance at the moment, so that the banks can just get on with what with doing what well they used to do best. You know, but at the same time, you know, there's a mechanism by which we can monitor that and take, you know, intervention where necessary.
I mean, I always worry about too much regulation in any area that the government are involved with, and banks I would include in that, because what you'll find is the politicians getting involved in things they don't understand, which is most things, I have to say, and I can say that as a former politician, is a dangerous thing. And actually, you know, if you look at what the government said when they were elected, one of the key planks on which David Cameron, George Osborne et al. Were talking was cutting regulation, cutting red tape and bureaucracy for businesses. Now, again, I have to say, I've been disappointed at the lack of activity in that area. I don't get the sense that my accountant is going to phone me up anytime soon and say, actually, your monthly retainer is going down, because guess what? The government aren't asking for half as much information. In fact, I would argue the opposite. You know, we're having more conversations with our HR people. We're having more conversations with PAYE about all the sorts of things that are going on there. The VAT changes were a nightmare. Maybe helped the retail sector for a short period of time. But again, the impact that had on all of us in terms of the bureaucracy that was involved in that. And again, John, do you get a sense that the government is serious about cutting red tape?
Well, I think I would echo your thoughts. I think, if anything, it's got more aggressive in certain areas. Dare I mention at the HMRC?
Oh, the tax man now, just like...
You know, you just feel the blue lights.
The SAS
flashing
at the... coming in at you.
Absolutely. You know, well, there's a big hole to fill, isn't there? So any opportunities to claw back or prod and poke, you know, I know for fact... It, you know, within many of the sort of the businesses we operate in, you know, it's causing severe problems. Where you know our great dear friends at the HMRC knock on the door, and how disruptive that can be.
At the same time, HMRC is, you know, one of the biggest employers in the region, you know, and you know they're trying to increase their activity despite pressures to cut their own numbers. So it's, again, there's two sides to every argument, isn't there?
Well, they had a period, didn't they, for a couple of years where they were told to lay off.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Peter Mandelson was very keen to say, let's just not collect tax, at least not until after the general election. I hope I'm not being too cynical when I suggest that, but Peter was a fabulous spin doctor, and I'm sure there was some political strategy in his head there. So you're right, Jane, in terms of how the tax people were going to react once the time came for collection to start taking place. But again, I go back to the point I made earlier about the banks. It seems to have gone from one extreme to the other. So one minute they're saying to businesses, don't worry too much about it, guys, just keep operating as best you can. And then the next thing, they're battering you over the head.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it comes down to relationships. You know, again, a lot of change on their side. So a lot of my clients have got a new, you know, customer relationship manager, as HMRC call them, a new customer relationship manager who doesn't understand their business, who's perhaps come in with a very fine tooth comb looking for 90 quid here and there. And actually, you know, they should be sitting down, understanding the business, understanding where the real risks are, and actually looking at their portfolio companies that they look after and seeing who's actually trying to avoid paying tax.
And
focusing on the people who potentially owe tens of millions rather than hundreds of pounds.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that they should profile a bit better. And we had an 18-month tax investigation, which cost us, unfortunately, our insurance had lapsed for a tax inspection. And it cost the best part of £20,000 to our accountants. At the end of it, they found nothing.
Yeah.
And you know, if they spent the same amount of time and vigour chasing companies or individuals who don't contribute anything tax-wise and avoid, I think they'd get a better return.
Well, certainly
get better.
I would agree with that, Dan. I think the other issue is that the rules are not clear. So you'll find the HMRC staff arguing amongst themselves. You get one letter giving you a certain amount of advice, and then that will go to the next level of seniority, and someone will overrule that. So the rules are not clear. So at the end of the day, it's like, well, what are the rules? So
the rules being unclear is a good thing for our business.
Well, absolutely. Well, there you go.
we have a classic case. Right at the very end of this inspection, they said, OK, well, you know, we accept this and this. And finally, you know, we are going to backdate this amount of tax for this reason. We said, well, we disagree with that because we're following your advice. What advice is this? The advice that's on your website. Ah, well, you know, that can't be right. that must be old advice. And I said, what's funny, we printed it off an hour ago.
That's the
they
point.
Don't keep their websites updated.
Well, they've been looking
the
at their intranet, that's, not their internet.
Yeah, yeah. That's the problem. But I do think, as I say, there's still an awful lot of confusion, bureaucracy, red tape that needs to be looked at by the government. But it's time for us to take another short break, so we can't continue the kicking of HMRC. We might continue afterwards. Stay with us, we'll be back in a mo.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna, City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the show. I'm joined in the studio this week by John Leach from Winning Pitch, Jane Boardman from Deloitte, and Daniel Davis from CPL Training. Well, we've been talking tax, we've been talking banks, and we've been talking about the poor conditions that are existing in the economy at present. But we've got to climb out of it. We've got to shake ourselves down and pick ourselves up. And John, I know you're a big believer that the way out of this is through enterprise, entrepreneurship and the private sector. So what can we do to start to get the people with the good ideas, the best ideas, growing again, being confident and creating the jobs that obviously are so necessary if we are to see an improvement in the economic situation?
I think the starting point is, and I think I don't think we're far from that starting to take place, is very much biz and the new infrastructure starting to create a series of products that are available for businesses to take advantage of growth opportunities. I think when we look at sort of, you know, how do you unlock the talent and the potential? For me, it's all about, you know, providing, you know, the right mentoring and the right coaching and the right infrastructure of support and advice to actually encourage these businesses to take full advantage of the opportunities that lie ahead. So I think, yeah, I mean, you know, we've got to look at the banks and the banks loosening up the cash, but I think we've also got to have sort of powerful stories being pushed out there, powerful messages, you know, that celebrate success, that celebrate entrepreneurship. There's not been a lot of that over the last 12 months. You know, and with the demise of Business Link, that's now, I believe, beginning to take its toll. Whatever you thought about Business Link, you know, there's a lot of our clients out there are saying, well, what next? What's happening? Where is the support infrastructure? What is going to happen? And I think, you know, that's something that needs to be picked up sooner rather than later, that sort of, you know, the support infrastructure that encourages, that provides advice, and you know, and provides that, you know, the necessary signposting to encourage the next level of growth.
Just picking up on a comment that you made there, John, about celebrating success. Dan, do you feel that in the UK we do enough of that? Because I often get the feeling that actually people are just waiting to knock you down if you succeed. You know, you'll see an awful lot of bad news, as Jane was saying earlier in the media. There's not an awful lot of good news or an awful lot of focus on the success stories, and they are about, aren't they?
I think there's plenty of success stories, and I agree, you know, wholeheartedly. I think there's, you know, you've only got to turn the news on every day, and, you know, all the news is based around is negative news about the economy. And I think that we can just talk ourselves into recession and keep ourselves, you know, there. And I think that there are a number of companies doing very well. Okay, it is a tough market out there at the moment, and I think it's more important at the moment than ever for companies to be explaining to their staff, speaking to their suppliers about ways of really building the business and keeping afloat. And I think you have a positive mental attitude, and also you communicate with the staff the part that they play, so they know exactly what they can bring to the business and how they can help grow it. I think, you know, that really helps. But I do think there's a lot of negativity out there.
And I want to see a culture created where actually businesses, entrepreneurs, successful stories, as John suggested there, are actually being talked up by politicians. You know, I want to see Cameron, Osborne and people like that actually coming onto the TV and saying, well, OK, yeah, some of the statistical evidence isn't looking great, but look at Company X, look at Company Y, look at this individual who's making it happen. And I do sense as well that we've still got caught in this post-election melee of debate and discussion about who's to blame. And actually, we've got to move on from that, because not who's to blame, it's actually about who's going to solve the problem now. And the longer the government, the existing government, talk about the problems they've inherited and how bad things are, the more difficult it's going to be to move on to that new page of confidence, reinvestment in business, reinvestment in companies, and, as I say, celebrating success.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I probably get shut down for saying this, but I think one thing we need to do is tin The Apprentice and Dragon's Den. Because I think what that does for entrepreneurship is provide a totally negative frame of mind. I mean, I think what, you know, what I'd like to see is more real stories out there pushed into the market around what it really takes to be an entrepreneur. You know, my experiences of dealing with thousands of successful small and medium-sized enterprises over many years would be that, you know, if anybody performed or behaved in the way that Sir Alan Sugar, or is it Lord Alan Sugar, behaved, then they'd have no business, you know. And the humiliation that's created through programmes like Dragon's Den would actually stop anybody from standing up in front of an investment panel and delivering. You know, and I think, you know, what we need to bring is a bit of humility to it all, you know, and actually try and clearly demonstrate and articulate what enterprise is all about. It's, and setting up a business all about. It's not about riding roughshod over everybody. It's about building a strong reputation, about building a strong personal brand. It's about feeling comfortable getting up and speaking about what you're passionate about without somebody dragging you down. So one thing I would say is, you know, can we please bring back Flying Start? You know, God rest Tony Wilson. You know, fantastic programme before its time. Let's see more of that.
Jane, is there anything that we can do around the tax system that you think would enable entrepreneurs, risk takers, to get much more incentive, much more support from the government than is the case currently?
I mean, yeah, there's always things you can do in terms of tax breaks and, you know, giving companies sort of pioneer status when they're in the early stages and, you know, and allowing them to effectively defer any tax on any profits that they make. You know, in reality, most businesses in the first few years don't make any money and don't pay any tax. So it's more about, you know, it's more about tax credits and incentives, and perhaps a tax scheme is not the best place to start with that, you know, for some of the bureaucracy reasons we talked about earlier, you know, not least. So I think it's about grants, more about grant schemes, you know, government putting aside money to basically say, as we said earlier, here's a pool of money that is focused on SMEs, in particular geographical regions, because I do think it's there's a geography issue as well, and clearly the Northwest needs investment. And I think, you know, putting that money aside, saying it's there, going out there, making people aware that it's there, encouraging them to apply for it, but then also mentoring those businesses through those early years. So many businesses that start up, I don't know what the stats are, John, you probably do, you know, in terms of businesses that fail in the first 3 years. And it's because, you know, a one-man band has a good idea, doesn't necessarily know what to do with it. They need more than just funding. They need support. Absolutely. They need training. They need skills, and need the opportunity to network with other businesses and learn from other businesses, and, you know, and grow in a relatively risk-free way, if you like, in those first few years, so that they feel like they are, you know, that they are building something for the future rather than just having a go.
I think also as well on the grant sort of side of things, I mean, as a company, we've had no grants since we started, and we perhaps, you know, could have done, but every time we've you know, investigated a particular grant pot of money, there's been that many barriers that have been put up in front of us. Okay, well, you know, you've got to prove that you know you can't find the money from anywhere else, and the bank has knocked you back. You've got to prove, you've got to do this, and this. You can't engage, you can't start that particular business until the grant has been approved. Now, quite often, you've missed the opportunity. So, if you want to be light on your feet, if you want to be entrepreneurial, you know, you're not going to be by going through all of these hoops. You're far better. You know, most of the time we've just run with the idea.
Absolutely.
Anyway, funded it ourselves and, you know, are taking all the risk ourselves.
Well, we tried to access some grants from to employ a couple of university, you know, smart kids. And, you know, with forms, you know, an inch thick, there's just no way it was going to happen. No. You know, it probably cost me $3,000 to get, you know, just to put the application together. So we, as you said, tinned it and just went ahead, forget it. Let's
There's
just move
a huge
on.
Mismatch though, isn't there, between the public sector's understanding of what those sort of forms take in terms of resource and how they may potentially stymie the opportunity, as you mentioned, Dan, and a business's view. And, you know, I get the fact that local authorities and others have to be very careful about procurement processes and it's public money and all the rest of it. But actually, again, if you talk about red tape and bureaucracy, nobody does it better than people who design some of those forms. And it's an absolute disgrace, I think, that, you know, they can expect companies to spend $50,000 upwards on a punt, you know, because that's what's happening still on a number of things that are taking place at this moment in time. You know, you tell, well, yeah, there is an opportunity there, but you've got to fill this, this, this and this in. And, you know, the statistics, the money soon builds up, doesn't it? And you've been in that position, Dan, I'm sure.
Exactly. And again, you never say, if you've basically exhausted every avenue, so you've been to the bank, they won't lend you the money, you've got no cash reserves, you can't fund it yourself, this is the last possible source of funding, a grant. Well, quite often, you know, that is far more of a risk of taxpayers' money than if you say, well, actually, we could afford, you know, some of this. We can go to the, you know, we could go to the bank, although, you know, we might not get as favourable terms as we would like. And actually, a bit of grant assistance would help, and it would create long-term sustainable employment.
Yeah.
You know, but you end up just walking away from it because you think, I haven't got the time. And also, I'm not going to miss the opportunity. And that, I think, is more important than anything. Mm-hmm. But by the time you've jumped through all these hoops, it's 6 months, it's 12 months down the line, and actually two or three other companies are in. They've jumped on board by that point, and you're coming in later on in the game, whereas if you see the opportunity, you need to take it there and then. Mm. I mean, one of the benefits of being involved in any type of SME business is that you can be light on your feet, you can make decisions quickly. If you see an opportunity, you can take it. You don't have to go to a big committee. It doesn't have to be, you know, this isn't in the budget, this isn't in this year's plan, so we're not going to do it. You know, it's not going to get looked at for 2 years. With a smaller company, a company that is entrepreneurial, you're going to take those risks.
Yeah. I think grants help to oil the wheels. I think in terms of, you know, companies that are chasing grants, then you've really got to question the long-term sustainability. I think the issue of finance, if I just will sort of wind it back to the point about finance, I think there is an issue that sometimes, you know, I'm sort of in a way contradicting myself here, is that, you know, we can give the banks a kick in, but with, you know, in some respects, you know, often what you find with entrepreneurs who've got ideas, they go into the bank with an idea on the back of a fag packet, it doesn't stack up. You know, the issues are far more fundamental than raising finance. It's more about presentation. It's about pitching. It's about turning up. It's about being sensible. It's about being articulate in what you say. And so often, you know, and I see this with a lot of technology-based businesses. We need finance. Now, you need to go out and sell something to generate revenue, to put cash in the bank. And, you know, trying to manage a business from behind the desk is not always the answer. Mm. You have to get out there and bang on doors. And sometimes the issue around funding and access to funding, you know, is that the root cause? The root cause I see in many instances is the inability and ineffectiveness of the individual to go out there and actually bang on some doors.
Great idea, but an inability to sell.
Yeah, the word sell.
It was interesting what you were saying earlier, John, about, you know, the apprentice and Dragon's Den, and I do think we've got a bit of a culture in the UK at the moment where people expect to have it all without working hard. You know, a lot of 15-year-olds, you ask them what they want to do, they probably say, I want to be on X Factor and, you know, and be a global megastar, you know, pop in a pop band.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the hard work ethic seems to have all but disappeared, you know, for certain aspects of our communities. And when you see people rioting, last week, that's again indicative of the problem. And I think we've got a situation now in the UK where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and a lot of that is about the skills gap. And we've got a generation of people who are just, you know, just lacking in skills. And when we've got a globalised economy, when it's just as easy to import somebody from Poland or to offshore your call centre or your back office function, you know, to have no skills is hard enough in just a UK market. But when you're operating in a global market, there's just so much competition. You know, and with technology advancing over the last couple of decades, the top jobs have increased because people need skills to work in a technological environment. You know, the jobs in factories are being replaced by robots, and you know that's not going to get any easier in the short term.
And I think your point about graft as well. I think your point about graft is it takes between 5 to 10 years of hard graft,
at least. Yeah,
and I think
least.
When we talk about skills shortages, we always bang on about service sector, construction, manufacturing, and so on. But that point you made, John, about not being enough good salespeople out there is something else that I think for a long, long time now this country has ignored, and I think it shows in a lot of businesses a bit more seriously. I've just got to quickly, sorry guys, move on to mention a few things that are coming up over the next few weeks I want to tell you about. Wednesday morning, City Talk, alongside Downtown Liverpool in Business, are hosting The Business of Football, a forum that we'll be discussing with the Chief Executive of Everton Football Club, Rob Elston, the MD of Liverpool, Ian Eyre, and Lorraine Rogers from Tranmere Rovers, among others, the business of the beautiful game. So if you can get along to the Hilton, 8:30 on Wednesday morning, please come along and say hello. We then have a very, very exciting conference coming up in November to start UK Enterprise Week at the Crown Plaza in Liverpool. It's Liverpool The Business Conference. Speakers so far confirmed: Steve Morgan from Redrow and Wolverhampton Wanderers, Toby Young, the political and business columnist for The Telegraph, Natalie Haywood, who's a Liverpool entrepreneur who owns Leaf on Bold Street, Sir Howard Bernstein, the chief executive of Manchester City Council, Joe Anderson, the leader of Liverpool City Council, and just confirmed, Gavin Wheeldon. Some of you may have seen him on Secret Millionaire. He's the chief executive of Applied Language Solutions. They'll all be in Liverpool on the 14th of November for that fantastic conference. And finally, on the 17th of November, again at the Crown Plaza, we have the Liverpool Awards, the 9th annual Liverpool Awards. If you've not made your nominations yet, then please do so at allthews.downtownliverpool.com. I'm afraid we've run out of time. Thanks to my guests. Thanks to my producer. Most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.